The Sean Green Show. Sean covers all things entertainment. Movies, books, news, concerts, television, video games, the entertainment guru. Sean covers it all. This is the Sean Green Show podcast. The Sean Green Show podcast on WGN Plus and SeanGreenShow.com.
Welcome back to the Sean Green Show. I'm Sean Green. I want to thank everybody out there that's listening. And for those of you that's been living under a rock for the last 25 years and don't know who Nirvana was and don't know who Kurt Cobain was, I just feel sorry for you. And today is unfortunately the 25th anniversary of the suicide of the frontman of Nirvana, Kurt Cobain. And Nirvana was one of those bands that at the time, you know, if there were, you know, if you was to say there was going to be a bigger band than Nirvana back then, I would say that you were lying, you know. And they just took over the music scene. It was like lightning, you know. And for me, as a fan, you know, it just totally took me by surprise, because at that time I was listening to a lot of Prince and 80s hair bands, and then Nirvana came along with this stripped down sound and just took over the music world. And like I said before, 25 years ago today was the suicide of the frontman, Kurt Cobain. But I have a treat for you guys. Charles R. Cross, who wrote the book Heavier Than Heaven back in 2001, he joins me on the Super Celebrity Hotline right now. And that book, you know, it... He did a ton of interviews for this book, and this is one of the things that gets me every time I come across Heavier Than Heaven, because I've seen like numerous documentaries on Kurt Cobain and Nirvana, and it all seems like that it took little excerpts from your book, because I feel like you were the original person to be in Cobain's world, to, in a sense, get how he operated. And I thank you so much for joining me today.
You're welcome, Sean. I'm happy to be with you even on a sad day. And, you know, part of what you're describing is because, you know, Kurt's world was my world. I edited a music magazine in Seattle, and we were the first place to ever write about Nirvana. So, you know, the world he came from was not that different than the world I came from. But, you know, it's a tragedy to be talking about it 25 years later.
Yeah, and since you were in that world, was it just as chaotic as people described it for him? Or was it even worse than what people would imagine? Because from what people that were around him or that did interviews in different, you know, documentaries, they were saying, you know, he wasn't happy. He was never happy. What did you see?
Well, I think it, in some ways the tragedy of it gets overplayed, because when you look at a life that's 27 years, Kurt's actual addiction was only the last 3 years of that life. There was a time, surprisingly, when he was the most sober member of Nirvana. You know, he didn't smoke and didn't drink for a while. And, you know, eventually there were demons, and there was a bit of a chaos when the band became huge. But that was really only a short time. I think if we look at somebody's life, we have to kind of look at the whole arc of it. And, Kurt also created an incredible amount of music. And, you know, the addiction was not his entire life. You know, it was part of it. It played a role, and it's in certainly mental illness and chronic pain played a role in his decision to take his own life. But nonetheless, he created an incredible body of work, and that's ultimately what I try to think about when I think about him.
Now, there was rumor that your book was going to be made into a movie, and that will be a movie that I know I will definitely want to see, because, like I said, you were the first person to actually give that inside look of Cobain. And there's been talk of it, and then there's been rumors that it was in the works. What's the status of that? Would you like to see a movie being made about Kurt Cobain? Because there've been
Yeah, of course. And I can't tell you exactly what the status is because I can't talk about it, but there's still work in one day this will be on the screen. I wish it already had been, but one day there definitely will be a production of this. The one thing I will tell you that's funny about this is that occasionally A-list movie stars will come through Seattle and have their representatives call me up and then come over to my house or take me out to dinner to try to lobby me as if, as the writer of the book, I have any say on whether they can play Kurt Cobain. But I can't tell you who some of those people are, but you would be shocked at the people that want this role, because it's an incredible dynamic story. So one day it will come to the screen, but certainly not in the next year.
And how do you take that when the Hollywood types come to you like that and say, hey, we want to do this? And in a sense, people tend to forget, you know, and the only time that they really remember Cobain is like on a day like this, and they don't really celebrate the music. But I mean, I wish you can really see my studio right now. It's like I got Cobain posters, Nirvana posters all over the place. But it's like I kind of take offense to people that just come in and they just want to do it because it's some kind of monetary value of it. And it's not like there's no integrity to what they're trying to do with Cobain. And I felt like what you did was it had like total integrity to it.
Well, I really appreciate that coming from you. And you know, yeah, my goal as a writer really was to tell this story and to, you know, do as much research as possible to try to paint the picture of the puzzle of who Kurt Cobain was. And even having spent years on it, I still, though, am haunted by, you know, some aspects of it. And I have a piece I wrote that just came up this morning on a Seattle website called Crosscut, which kind of talks about I live, you know, in the world that Kurt lived in. And today, when I drive into the city, I will drive by some of the awful drug bin motels that still exist 25 years later that he lived in. And it still haunts me, you know. You know, knowing as much as I know about addiction and darkness, the loss still haunts me. But the music somehow does make it better. You know, it really does. It kind of soothes me, and the artistic integrity of what he created, I think at this point, is very well established. He's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and almost every poll lists him as one of the most influential artists. Bizarrely, he has also become one of the more cited artists in hip hop music.
Yeah.
Where he has become, you know, his race didn't matter. The artistic integrity of what he created touched a whole generation of music fans. And many young people are still turning and finding a lot of value in the music that he created.
Oh, yeah, that's totally so. Because, you know, my son, who really he doesn't, I mean, he has like little taste in rock music, but not as much as I do. But he was listening to I think it was a Jay-Z record, and on one part of the song, he kind of the cadence of the rap was kind of tailored behind Smells Like Teen Spirit, and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool, you know. But yeah, as far as, you know, the book is concerned, Heavier Than Heaven, Dave Grohl, you know, he didn't really have anything to do with the book, but since then, has he reached out to you at any point after the book and say, hey, this is a great book, or, you know, this is something that was left out of the book?
No. I mean, I know Dave, and I talked to Dave. I wrote some of the first articles that were written on the Foo Fighters. You know, I've lost friends to suicide, you know, and you know, I knew Chris Cornell, who died in 2017 of suicide.
Yeah.
And it's such a personal tragedy that whether somebody's able to kind of talk about it or not, you know, I never have been judging of that. But when it came to Dave, you know, I don't have his comments in the book. He did not want to talk at that point, and he still rarely wants to talk about Kurt. You know, it's a very complicated thing for all the people that lose people to suicide. And, you know, I hate to tell you, but this year the suicide rate is, you know, significantly higher than the year that Kurt died. You know, this is a national tragedy and epidemic of unbelievable proportions. And we need to talk about mental health, and people need to normalize it when they need help, so they don't end up in the spot. 45,000 Americans will die this year of suicide, and that's significantly more than traffic fatalities.
Oh, wow. And that's one of the things that people need to realize too, is that there's always help out there if you feel like you're going down that dark road. And there are numbers you can call, there are websites you can go to. And one thing that after talking to you, it seems that I'm like at a loss of words just talking to you, because one thing that I got from Kurt Cobain is that he wanted to be around genuine people, and you seem like one of those people that were totally genuine, and I thank you for doing this interview. Charles R. Cross, thanks for doing this interview. Heavier Than Heaven, if you haven't read it, make sure you guys check it out. You can go on Amazon now to check it out. It's a good read, and I highly advise you go out and get it, and just take your time, read it. And like I said, if you are in that dark place, a National Suicide Prevention Hotline, you can definitely check that out. Call them, you know, talk to somebody, you know. Yeah, trust me. Sometimes you just need to talk to somebody, and they can pull you out of that dark place. Charles R. Cross, thanks for joining me, man.
Thank you, Sean.
And we'll be back right after this.
Thanks for listening to The Sean Green Show, the entertainment guru. You could friend him on Facebook, Sean Green Show Media, or follow him on Twitter, at Sean Green Show. The Sean Green Show on WGN Plus and SeanGreenShow.com.